Good morning and welcome back to The Morning Magazine. It's time for part two.
Welcome, everybody, to Morning Magazine for this February 24th, 2023, part two. We are welcoming in the studio right now. We have friends of ours, Craig Broren, Wisconsin Rapids Public Schools Superintendent. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning.
And Julie Kolarik.
That's right.
Oh, all right. Write that down, Pam. I actually got it right. Principal of Woodside Elementary School. Thank you so much for being here, Julie.
Thanks for having us, James.
It's nice to have you both here. How's everybody doing this morning? Everybody doing all right? Craig, you are?
I know. I understand what the commentary is there, James. I appreciate that. Yeah, we're doing fine. All of the snow has been cleared. I understand some buses were running a bit late this morning. I think that has more to do with just taking our time, because of course roads are still a little bit snow covered, but not anywhere near what it was like yesterday and the day before. So
yeah, we're going to get into a little of that and talk about an update with the Wisconsin Rapids Public Schools with Craig. But first, Julie, it's the first time she's joining us, so of course I have to put her on the spot first. But no, thank you for being here, Julie, and taking the first reins here. Can we get an update on Woodside and how things are going over there to start things off?
Yeah, for sure. We have lots of great things going on at Woodside, and one of the main reasons that I want to talk about is this outdoor area that we're developing through a generous grant of the Legacy Foundation. We have a $1.7 million project that's been funded with a $1.2 million grant from the Legacy Foundation and a matching grant through the school district of $300,000. And our outdoor campus portion is going to be phenomenal, which means it's going to match the inside, our students and staff, which are already phenomenal. So I'm very excited about that.
What is, for people that are just maybe just hearing about it, I've only heard a little bit of maybe the headlines of the Learning Center and that. What can we tell them about this and how it's going to benefit these kids and teachers?
Sure, for sure. So this is my fifth year at Woodside, and one of the first things that we did when I came to Woodside is figure out what's going well, what can we do better, and one of the things that came out were our facilities on the outside. At Woodside, roughly 20% of our population are students with special needs, and our outdoor environment, though we had some things in it, it really wasn't great. So we needed more experiences where kids could play with one another and, you know, just get some outside experience out there. And so this was born then in 2018, and then COVID, right?
So
things took a little bit of a pause for, I don't know, feels like 17 years, but 3 years. And so this came up again. And so this is really born from our students and our staff, and it's looking at our campus, and we're updating all of our playgrounds to be accessible and inclusive for our students, and that's the portion that's fully funded. We're hoping to continue to raise money, so I'm hoping that anybody that's listening here today and that would like to get involved can go to our website, you know, www.woodsidepride.com, and donate, and we're hoping to have an outdoor classroom as part of this and some pickleball courts. And the main wonderful thing for our students and staff, of course, are what we can do during the day. But this facility would be available to our entire community. And I think that was really the draw for the Legacy Foundation, is just how amazing it'll be for Wisconsin Rapids.
Opening things up and having it something that the community can use certainly is going to bring more people in. It's also going to bring more people not only physically to Woodside, make them more familiar with it, and hopefully make them a little more in tune with you know, what's going on at the school, what's going on with our public schools, and understanding that a little bit more. I think, you know, especially as many times as you and I have talked about this, Craig, when it comes to this kind of modern influx of people and barking and these kind of things and all that stuff, so much of that stuff stems from not talking to your kids, not talking to teachers, not being on the school grounds, not seeing what's actually happening. People usually fear things when they don't understand or they don't know the answers to something. If you give them the answers, they not have as much to fear, as much to bark about. It just seems like another added bonus of this is another opportunity to bring community members to Woodside, to a public school, and then to see what it's like and to see that, hey, there isn't really much to bark about.
Right. Well, and that's the piece, I think you highlighted it, that you said well, which is the fact that we're public. And so clearly everybody knows that if they have an elementary school in their neighborhood, that if there's a decent playground there, I'm sure their kids play on it, you know, anytime that school's not in session. And this is no different. I think the primary difference is going to be the size and scale, because for $1.5 million plus dollar project, it's going to be one heck of a nice playground area and outdoor learning center. But on the same hand, the thing that makes it the most intriguing and why we think it's going to be a draw for people even from outside of the community to come and use it is because of the fully accessible features. So there's kids that can, with limited mobility or other special needs, that can do largely the same thing as their fully abled peers can do, playing tag or, you know, the floor is lava games or whatever we always like to do as a kid on a playground structure. And of course, the size and scale and the location is fantastic in terms of, you know, its continuity with both the city and Grand Rapids. But it'll be one of the few fully accessible large scale playgrounds and outdoor learning spaces in our area, I think, comparable to what's in Point. And I can't, what's the name of that park, Julian Point?
Cash Park.
Yeah, there you go. So if people have some idea, and I've never been there, but having three little kids prior, now my kids are not totally grown, but, you know, older now, we're not at parks. But back in the day, we'd travel to different communities to use their parks because it's a good time. And so we also think something like that is going to transpire, which is a benefit just to the Rapids area. So, yeah, that idea of that partnership as well as incorporating all needs and abilities and those sorts of things are huge for public schools. And I think that underpinning is what people can probably recognize or perhaps support the most, and that is we don't get to pick, which is great. That, that's beneficial. Any kid, regardless of their size, shape, color, ability level, or anything other, any other characteristic or qualifier, comes to our schools, and they're certainly welcome, and we do our best to provide them a quality education. And in this case, with this project, a quality life experience, too, both during school and outside of school.
As great as tag and the floor is lava game is, and it's so great, Pam and I are actually playing that right now. That's why my feet are not on the ground. Those are great games. It's also great to be able to have things for kids that maybe can't play some of those games, like tag or that kind of thing. And I think that that's a part of... I don't want to say a part of society we forget about, but a part that we kind of, kids, we just lump them all into one group, kids, and just put them under one umbrella. And as being former kids, like all of us are, we you could maybe remember, not one of us were, no two were alike. Not even twins are completely alike. So we need things for different kids. And most importantly, kids that may not have it the same as other kids. When it comes to that, do you think that there's going to be more of this with other elementary schools having maybe being more accessible for kids that have? So I Julie brought up a stat there, 20% of the kids at Woodside being that way. I wouldn't know that otherwise, and I wouldn't have guessed something like that. That I'm never going to forget that. That's important information. I think that me as a citizen should know that stuff. And I think it makes me more empathetic, more understanding, and more like, yeah, let's get this done. Those kids deserve to play too. Do you think we could see more of that?
I don't think I know. Yeah, so I don't want to let spool too much out here, but sure. The conversation I had recently, not yesterday, but the day before, I'm getting my days mixed up with the snow days and whatnot.
Time's a flat circle.
Yeah. on Wednesday, conversation, and ultimately what's going to transpire is we're going to put together a comprehensive plan to address some of these things at multiple sites within the district that benefit communities. And I'm being somewhat amorphous in my description because, frankly, we just got the word that something like that over a multi-year period might come to fruition. So we just had an all-admin meeting yesterday to begin the conversation on developing a comprehensive plan to put in place. So I'm hoping that some point maybe in the next 60 days, or so, I'll be on and I'll tell you about all the cool things that are going to happen over the next 3 to 5 years with our schools and in our communities.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Julie, I don't want to wrap up things at Woodside just yet. Are there things that the community, you think it'd be good to know that's going on over there at Woodside? Certainly the outdoor play, our Learning and Activity Center is noteworthy, and we could talk about that the whole show if you'd want, but I know that there's a lot going on over there at Woodside. So are there other things and just that you're noticing at Woodside that you think would be good for the community to know about?
Yeah, definitely. I think that all of our professionals that come to school every day, and I think everybody knows this, you go into public education because you care about kids. And I think it's not unique. I'm sure Craig can speak to that, to Woodside itself. But, man, our professionals, our staff, from amazing Michelle and Nicole in our office at Woodside to, you know, our custodian, Ryan, everybody is doing this for the kids. And that is just something I can say, but you would come to Woodside or any of our schools, I would gather, you can feel it. Mm. And I don't think that, you know, we hear these things in the news about schools, and we hear some of the things that they're doing well and some of the things that they're not. I'm telling you, people are working their tail off, and they're there for the kids. And the kids feel it, too. I mean, we get the joy from the kids. So in a huge, nebulous kind of way, just overall, the feeling that's intangible is just amazing at Woodside, and dare to say at all of our schools. You know, there's heart here. Specifically, we do lots of things for our kids, and they do lots of things for us. You know, every month we try and have somebody from the community that comes in. I don't know, maybe at some point, maybe next month, I don't know, a remote location for a radio show or something
that. I like the sound of that. I like that.
So we're always looking for things and bringing community members in. Last month we had the River Kings in. At the end of the year, we'll have our Woodside graduates that will come back. Our phrase is, once a lumberjack, always a lumberjack. Pam in the front office.
That's right.
So lots of great things like that.
Mm. What is one of the primary ways that you support teachers? And how do you do that while supporting parents at the same time? You know, it's not an easy something that you can necessarily learn in a book. You've got to kind of learn through the job and through the process. How have you found the best ways to do that?
That's a great question. I think it's with anything, whether it's teachers or any person, a parent is to listen. Everybody's got their perception of their reality, and it's always good to hear that from the person. And then, you know, I think in education, our minds are always going 27 miles a minute, and we're thinking, okay, you're saying this. What do I need to do next? We're fixers. Mm-hmm. And so just giving that opportunity for whether it's the staff to share what's going on and thinking about, okay, you know, is this something that's actionable? Can we do something about it? Do they just want to share this so we're aware? I think that's the number one thing with anybody is just to listen. And then if there's something that needs to be done, do it.
Very well said. And it's funny how often that is the answer. Listening, communicate, you know, when it comes to this stuff, talking to each other, listening to each other, that's the big key to whatever the solution or whatever word it is we're discussing. We are discussing a lot with Craig and Julie, and we're going to do that some more of that when we come back from commercial break here on Morning Magazine at WFHR, where we are locally grown radio. Welcome back, everybody, to Morning Magazine here at WFHR for this February 24th, 10:47 on the clock. Speaking with Craig and Julie. And Craig, I wanted to put you on the spot. I mean, ask you some questions. I wanted to get an update on the Wisconsin Public Schools area.
Yeah, perfect. So the good segue is, if the listeners recall the opening minutes of the program today, was that we just came off a couple of closures, and there's been several this year, which is unfortunate when the weather doesn't cooperate, you know, potentially more. They're talking about ice, possibly a quarter to half inch of ice Monday morning. Mm-hmm. If we see something like that, clearly running buses and driving around isn't going to be super great, but we do have virtual / offsite learning capability, and one of the pieces that kind of has been tossed around is, you know, what are the expectations during that time, and how does that look for parents? Clearly, still making the decisions around school closures is never an easy decision because there's impacts, and you know, planning, childcare, and those impacts are significant, and so it's still not something that we're going to take flippantly and just pretend like, oh, people can figure it out because it's just easier for us to not run buses, for example, or not have school. But with that said, the alternative, because there's expectations in state statute and in federal obligations in terms of IEPs and other aspects, mm-hmm. that we have to commit to a certain number, a minimum number of hours of instruction in a school year. And for those that have been around town for a while, remember in the 18-19 school year, we had 7 closures that year. 1 week was 4 days long. We closed for 4 days, 2 for ice and then 2 for like minus 45 wind chills. And so when you have a closure for 4 days, and in that time, we weren't equipped or set up to do comprehensive offsite or virtual learning on closure days. And so what we ended up having to do is extend the school day. We added, I think it was like 8 or 10 minutes, and then added days to the calendar. Clearly, there's an impact to doing that too. However, we have no choice when you're talking about meeting the obligations of our statutory obligations and meeting those hours of instruction. When you're doing offsite slash virtual learning, offering it and having the capability of providing some academic supports and resources and engagement during that time can count. Mm-hmm. Now, what does that look like? What if I'm a kid that doesn't have access to virtual? Well, at our elementary levels, primarily we do like take-home packets, and there is some stuff online that if parents can access, they can do. If not, that's not a problem either. Keep in mind that we run school normally in person. There's reasons that kids are absent every day. Mm-hmm. So the expectation isn't 100% participation on virtual or offsite learning days, but it is offered and available, and academic and other supports transpire during that time. And we will then avert having to add days to the calendar or largely modify the school schedules to meet this hour and minute requirement. Now, I'll also say, is that the same as in-person learning? No. And no one is claiming that it is. But it's kind of like finding the sweet spot when we know via our learning through the pandemic, when in some cases it was forced upon us, that it's 2023 and doing something off-site on a sporadic or periodic basis makes all kinds of sense, and still meeting our obligations both as professionals and under the Wisconsin statutes. So that's kind of that happy medium there. And then another quick update would be to say we just had a board primary. So you and I have talked prior, mm-hmm. James, about local politics is the most important politics. Mm-hmm. And so what I would simply say to that is have folks educate themselves in terms of what their options are, not only for the school board race coming up here in April, but we have a race for a new judge mm-hmm. seat here in Wood County, Supreme Court, and then, of course, there'll be multiple other things on the ballot come April as well. And that engagement, politically speaking, at the local level is huge, so I'd toss that out there as a relatively recent circumstance as well.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Do your homework, everybody. One of the things, I couldn't help myself, that was a pun. I didn't mean to make it, but it is a pun right there.
I liked it.
Yeah, thank you. That's nice of you, Julie. It wasn't worth it, though. When it comes to, for you, the same similar question I had for Julie, but with more so with principals, what is your primary way you support principals in this area that you try to?
I'll try to stay out of their hair. It's interesting. So they're, technically, as the superintendent, you're responsible for every staff member we employ, technically.
Right, right.
But of course, the direct supervision piece is around our administrators. And I think our elementary buildings highlight the complexity and nuance of this, because we have 7 elementary schools, Woodside, of course, being one of them. Julie's probably going to tell you it's the best one.
So true.
Of course, reserve comment. They all do quite well. Woodside, of course, does as well. But my point is that they all have very different and unique identities, right? And supervision of professionals in a school environment, it would be similar to other circumstances in which medicine, for example. If you are a supervising doctor in some capacity, you're not telling each doctor how they should do it based on what you think. You cultivate and grow an attitude of collaboration as well as some freedom and autonomy because they're professionals themselves and have this capability. When you couch that in knowing that our buildings all have unique identities and unique staff, unique clientele, and all these other unique communities, all these other aspects, it only makes sense that some things are cohesive and done district-wide and other things are not. Mm-hmm. And it is not a supervisory relationship where I am micromanaging what's happening in 7 different elementary schools or 11 or 12 school buildings. That would be impossible. Mm-hmm. I'm one human being. I don't want to do that, nor am I able to do that. But it's that balance of providing what the framework is or the expectations are, and then, of course, providing supports to meet those expectations in that framework, but also having that latitude and ability to run and guide your building as you see fit and as your staff sees fit, frankly, because that's also directed somewhat by staff and somewhat by kids. So it's not just as easy as it is in some supervisory capacities where you say, this is what you do, this is how you do it when you're here. There's some of that, but the nuance and the beauty of the job, there can't be parameters created to be that prescriptive.
Very well said. Very well said, Craig. Just real quick, 1 second. Julie, we have a dome over at Washington Elementary. I'm just, you know, nothing against Woodside, but Washington has a dome. So, it's pretty cool. I just want to get into a little back and forth with you about that because I love this. One of the things that I think that is important that we've discussed today is communication, is talking. And I think that when we're talking about some of the issues that we have nowadays with schooling and that, they are so quickly answered by simply talking to people, to whether it's your kids, whether it's the teachers, whether it's Craig or Julie or anybody like that. I think that you can have a lot of a quick conversation or a long thought end in a quick conversation just by asking questions. I also think that there's a lot to be said for the openness and transparency of you and the way you've carried the position, Craig, the way that other principals and people do in this area. I think that that goes a long ways too, and it's helpful. Appreciate it, but it also doesn't always seem like it's the easiest thing to do. So for people out there that don't know anything about this, and maybe you're far removed from school and everything, I'd like to ask, what is one of the more difficult parts of the job that you don't think people would, you know, your average person would understand? Julie, I'd like to start with you with that.
Great. You know what, as you're asking that, I'm thinking, I think it's that balance. When we send our kids to school, our own personal kids, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 kids that you're sending, and they're your heart and soul, right? And then when they come to school, we have our teachers in the classroom, and they have 30, roughly 20 hearts and souls on there. And when your child comes home, and this goes back to what you said earlier about this communication piece, and goes home and says, hey, X, Y, and Z happened in school today, you get that one piece. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes one of the hardest things is balancing, you know, when a parent comes in and says, hey, Susie said X, Y, and Z happened. And the hardest thing is to help them realize that not that your child, their perception might be actually different of what happened. Having that conversation where, like, okay, this is what we saw, this is what we happened. So I think that sometimes can be challenging because oftentimes that communication isn't just as straightforward. And I wish it were more of that in many cases. So I think there's that. I think the other challenging, you had asked what's so challenging that people don't understand. I don't know. There used to be some statistic about the decisions that a teacher makes on a daily basis. Yeah. It's very similar to a doctor in surgery. Yes. And I don't think that people get that. You've got 20, 30 kids in there. You're thinking about this kid and what they're doing right now and how to help them today, tomorrow, and 2 weeks from now. But you're also thinking of the other 25 kids and what they're doing. And you're noticing behavior. And I think that delicate balancing act of seeing it all, knowing it all, and doing something about it all in a second, in a moment, in 2 years, you know, down the line is, I think, I wish more people understood that. That's the challenging part. Teaching's an art and a science. It's beautiful, but it's also challenging.
Appreciate that insight. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. And I will note that I teach as young as 17 and as old as 60, 65, and just completely see exactly what you're talking about. And at the same time, understand that I can't relate to that. I get it on a certain level, but I also understand that I don't understand. And that's part of what empathy is about. And that's what I'm trying to do with this question here is create a little more empathy and put people in your guys' shoes so that maybe when it comes to some of this barking and all that kind of thing, that maybe you have a little more understanding going into this stuff. I'm not saying that you don't. You should have concerns. They're your kids. You should care about that. That's not a bad thing. But how you go about that care, how you direct that concern, I think, is very key to this. So you can do a lot with what is it? Our moms always said, you get more bees with honey. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a lot more better if you can be a little more empathetic. Craig, how about for you when it comes to that? Like as far as things of the job that we wouldn't understand, and I think it's a little more broad for you because I don't think people understand nearly enough about what it is to be a superintendent.
Yeah, well, I mean, so I alluded to it earlier, but yeah, I'm responsible for the organization, and that is reflected down to an hour and a half a day noon duty aide. And her or his behavior, for example, and You know, we have around 800 employees and individuals making decisions on a regular basis. And sometimes those are the great decisions. Most of the time, those are great decisions. And sometimes it might be a poor decision. One of the things that I've always said is I've never claimed to be perfect, and nor have I claimed that our schools are perfect. On the same hand, I do think intent is super important. Mm-hmm. And this is my 22nd year in education. I think Julia has put in a similar number of years. 13 years as a superintendent and held multiple positions, including coach, teacher, athletic director, principal, so forth. The long and short of it is, during that entire time, over two decades, I have never met an individual that comes into work at a school thinking, God, I really want to screw with kids today.
Yeah, right.
It just makes no sense.
No. Yeah.
That is not the underpinning. Mm-hmm. The underpinning is, you know what, I made a mistake, potentially, and it's impacting your kids, so now let's figure out how we rectify that. Or you don't have the full story. Mm-hmm. And from a district operational perspective, there is absolutely nothing we're doing that's private or confidential that the majority of the community at large can't or shouldn't know about. Now, personnel matters and some sensitive potential legal circumstances, but that purview is quite narrow. And the idea that there's all kinds of magical or weird or bizarre things that we're engaged in, you know, and trying to hide or cover up in some capacity is a total joke. Mm. And I've always been open book. What do you want to see? And if it's something that legally I can share with you and explain, I'm happy to do so. But unfortunately, James, we're in a circumstance where in some cases facts make no difference.
Yeah.
So, or we get facts and twist them to mean something completely different. So that's kind of the environment that we're in now. But the long and short of it is, and this comment I'll stand behind until the day I die, there isn't anything that we're intentionally doing incorrectly. That would be lunacy when you're talking about working with kids.